Yes, BBC. And anyone here remember Greater London Radio all those years ago? Well, those were the producers and presenters there, mainly producers, who were being phased out, really, after Victor Rothschild in 1987 booted out the Director General in the 1980s. And as I was working at Marylebone High Street in the newsroom, you could see, bit by bit, the really good journalists and the good producers being eased out. But they were a fantastic bunch to teach me a bit about the profession, and I've never really stopped since. So, here we are. What is NATO? So I'm going to be a bit boring as an investigative journalist and go through a little bit of the history of NATO. It was quite strange, wasn't it, how the Cold War started just about straight after the Second World War. And I just did a little look around. Up until 1980, a whole load of the middle-ranking and senior Nazi generals, colonels, etc., were brought into NATO. And I'll just run through Adolf Halsinger. And these are the people who were the top people in NATO, the senior military positions in NATO up until 1980. Adolf Heutzinger, Hans Spiegel, Johann Steinhoff, Franz Josef Schutzer, Ferdinand von Singer and Etterlin, Johann von Kielmansegg, Ernst Ferber and Karl Schnell, all senior Nazis who we fought in World War II, who then became senior NATO military officials, that is, chiefs of staff and things like that. So it's pretty obvious what was going on to the Soviet Union and the Russians at the time, that there was a transfer of the people that they've been fighting on the Eastern Front into a new organisation known as NATO. Then we had also, around about the same time, the creation of the State of Israel. And a lot of people have wondered, why is it that all these Nazi war criminals weren't really pursued in the way we hoped they were? People who'd lived through the war. And what happened was, in the vote to create the State of Israel at the UN, Nelson Rockefeller in the States got all of the South American countries to vote for the creation of the State of Israel, and he did a deal with Ben-Gurion, the first boss of Israel, basically. He said, you can have a country or vengeance, but not both. And so a deal was done between the Americans and the Israelis that they weren't going to go after the Nazi war criminals. And of course, that did happen in the early 1960s, but then never again. And so this was one of the reasons, I think, that there was an integration of a lot of the Nazi empire into NATO and into the NATO countries, particularly into the US. Then it's one of my specialities. When I left the BBC, I got involved in a protest down at Wandsworth Bridge, and the chap came to me and said, you want to have a look at these people called the Bilderbergers? Well, has anyone, put up your hand up, please, if you've heard of the Bilderbergers. Good, thank God, because back in the time we were around about 2000, hardly anyone had heard about them. And what Bilderberg was, it was created in 1954, really, to be the political lobby for NATO. As a think tank, and the chairman of Bilderberg for the first 20 years was a chap called Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, who just so happened to be a former officer in the SS. So this organisation, as a political lobby, was keeping very, very much trying to keep under the radar. And you know what? I'm so pleased and proud that when we had the Bilderbergers in Britain in Watford in 2012, I think it was, or 2013, we had a massive demonstration down there where thousands of, around about 4,000 people came down to demonstrate against Bilderberg in Watford. Far more than in any of the other countries where these demonstrations took place. Okay, so we wind flash to the 1950s, the Bilderberg started, and of course it's been eating into our democracy in the NATO countries ever since, making sure they get their people over there. At the moment we've got Goldman Sachs, I believe, running the show. Yeah. And of course they're always at the Bilderberg conferences. They're the people that funded the Obama and Clinton electric campaigns. So in 1966, something wonderful happened. Do you know what it was?
When?
Anyone like to just remind us, because this is just within my memory. When? The French, under de Gaulle, kicked out NATO. They said, no, we're not having NATO anymore, thank you very much. And the Americans had to go with their tail between their legs out of the country. And many of you, I'm sure, have seen the wonderful film that was made about we were just chatting about it. Can you remind me what the name of the film was, please? About the CIA trying to bump off De Gaulle.
The Day of the Jackal.
Thank you, everyone. That's your collective memory, because everyone, when mine fails me. So they stayed out of NATO until Sarkozy in 2014. So that's almost 50 years. If the French can do it, so can we.
Yeah.
Anyway, so if we go back to 1972, we had an amazing headline in the Daily Express on the Saturday. And that headline was, Bormann is alive. Now, Martin Bormann was Hitler's private secretary, and there was a whole load of discussion after the war about what had happened to this guy. He disappeared. Oh, then they said that they found his body. But no, actually, Stuart Stephen, who is a Jewish journalist from Bristol that had come to work on the Daily Express, along with a Hungarian photographer, Ladislas Farago, they got photographs of Bormann in Buenos Aires. And they put them in the Daily Express that day. There was a big hoo-ha about that. And it was wonderful to see that actually this attempt to cover up the relationship between the British here, that is to say Desmond Morton and Winston Churchill over the road, and Martin Bormann and Adolf Hitler over in Berlin, was being exposed. And this is what I wrote my book about, which I published during the lockdown. It's called The Traitors of Arnhem. And it explains that in 1944, the deals were being done across the road and in Berlin with between the two countries to give safe passage to these Nazis. And so I think for many people that don't understand just how close, we know a lot about Operation Paperclip and the Americans, but we don't necessarily understand that it was down here as well we're doing deals. They were making sure that the Nazis had safe passage after the war in exchange for the loot of the whole of Europe, $1 billion or so, which was a lot of money back in the 1940s. If you're interested in the book, I've got some leaflets about it, where you can get it online or whatever later. Then we had in the 1980s, anyone heard of Operation Gladio?
Yes.
Operation Gladio. Yes. So what was that about? That was about blowing up European citizens right across the continent, mainly in Italy and Belgium and places like that. And this was a NATO intelligence-led operation. The stay-behind forces were blowing up Europeans and blaming it on, guess who? Communist sympathisers, communist supporters. But it wasn't. It was fascists. And it was NATO that was doing this. And then, if for anyone here that's not seen it, the BBC, bless them, back in 1992 did a brilliant programme, three-part series, Time Watch, with Alan Frankovich, where they explained, they took me through the whole the evidence that NATO was blowing people up across Europe and trying to blame it on the Soviet Union. So there's another little exploit of wonderful NATO, which I think, you know, we can all agree we just need to leave as soon as possible. Bologna Railway Station bombing, nearly 100 people altogether killed around that, the Brabant massacres in Belgium and the Piazza Fontana in Italy. What they were doing was, guess what, Italy was turning communist. And so NATO decided we're not having that, and the CIA, and so they just started blowing people up in Italy. And eventually they even kidnapped and killed Aldo Moro, the Prime Minister. And this is all we're not supposed to know about this, but if you go and have a look at the BBC Time Watch series, they did a fantastic job. Aaron Frankovich did a fantastic job on that.
More than 1,100 Italians murdered
by NATO. So it's a shame that Italy didn't leave, really. I mean, anyhow, so then we had the famous statement that we heard a little bit about earlier on by James Baker, the US Secretary of State, on February the 9th, 1990. We promise not to move an inch eastwards. Yeah. Oh dear, what a fib. Because, of course, as we've also just heard, the expansion of NATO is doubled eastwards. So the Americans were just lying. And now, of course, we've got an American war going on in Europe, American fueled, and with the British, of course, involved in that, which is a massive proxy war, which Europe is going to be the whole of Europe is going to suffer from. Then in 1989, Alfred Ehrhausen, who was trying to do the, after the Berlin Wall was fall, when the Berlin Wall was falling, Alfred Ehrhausen was the Deutsche Bank chair, suddenly gets, he's trying to do all these deals between the Soviets and the West and the Germans. Oh, he's assassinated. And NATO were implicated in his assassination too. The idea is, of course, if you haven't got it by yet, by now, in polite circles, in diplomatic circles, it was well known what NATO was really all about. It was nothing to do with defence. It was about three things. Keep the Russians out, the Americans in, and the Germans down. And the assassination of Ehrhausen was part of keeping the Germans down. And of course, exactly the same with the Nord Stream pipeline. Keep the Germans down. And isn't it frightening the way that the Germans have just not kind of said anything about the fact that the Americans blew up this joint venture between them and the Russians? And then along comes Putin. You know, here now NATO gets starts getting excited again. Here's someone we can really hate. But in 2000, he joined the World Economic Forum, the G8, and all that stuff. But Putin is quite smart because he was making friends with the West. But meanwhile, behind his back, he's building up the military machine to take on the United States and win. And I think 20 years later, where we are, 23 years later, that's now where we are. The Russians are confident that if the Americans want to have a war with them, that the Americans are going to lose. And let's hope we don't get caught in the middle of all of that. Trying to bring it just a little bit more up to date, and by the way, I do a program every week online. It's at thisweek.org.uk. And we look at local politics in Bristol, national politics and international stuff every week, pretty much. So if you're interested, you can even get an app for your phone, called the Not the BCFM Politics Show app, which you can find at thisweek.org.uk, and just follow us there, and you get an email as well if you want. But one of the news stories we covered this week is horrific, and that is the United States is just in the process now of getting permission to fly its drones out of Fairford in Gloucestershire. Now, these drones, we know, are used for things like the double tap killings, where they attack and kill a wedding party or a funeral, and then they wait 20 minutes, half an hour, until the rescuers have come in, and then they send another Hellfire missile down to destroy the wedding party. Now, these drones, it looks almost certain now, are going to be starting to fly out of Fairford in Gloucestershire. So I would like to see you all this time, in a month's time, down at Fairford Airfield. As, by the way, Stop the War Coalition organised some brilliant protests down at Fairford at the time of the Iraq War. Where were they? Well, they're doing things like putting on their website silly things like, oh, the Russians have got to withdraw from the Donbass or Ukraine or whatever it is. So they're completely off. They're not trying to stop the war at all, are they? Are they? No. Of course not. I think there's a positive thing to say about all of this is that we heard from Patrick particularly about the censorship. It's appalling censorship of what's going on. Of course, all the journalists pretty much know it's being censored, but then they don't dare say anything or they'll lose their jobs. And I think, you know, we need to have a little bit of sympathy for journalists, not just hate completely on them, because they're human, they're like the police, they have to do what they're told, otherwise they lose their jobs. Now, many of them, I think, are actively lying, but there are some there also that are trying to do the best that they can and hanging on in there for a time where they can say things, and maybe sometimes go out with a bang, as they do occasionally. William Joyce, who was a broadcaster in the Second World War in Luxembourg, Radio Luxembourg, for the Nazis, and he was an American who was called Lord Haw Haw. Now, the British, over here and in the war cabinet down the road, had a big discussion in World War II. What do we do about this guy? Because he's broadcasting to all of the British people from Radio Luxembourg on Media Wave, and they just made a very, I think, very brave and important decision, which was, we're not going to try and jam him. We'll just take the mickey, and we'll lampoon him. And of course, the other side, the Nazis, were trying to stop everything. What's going on now is the complete opposite. If we had the courage of our convictions politically in this country, we would allow RT to be broadcast. We would allow Press TV. We would allow all of these foreign countries to broadcast. show up our own corrupt, propagandistic mass media and the billions of pounds spent in it here in London. So I finally say, I think actually what's happening is a very positive thing. I mean, you might find that a strange thing to say. But the establishment in this country, the City of London, etc., Goldman Sachs and the rest of the Bilderbergers, what they're doing is they're trying to fight a war on two fronts at the same time. That is to say, they're taking on the Chinese and the rest of the world as they're failing in their own economy. And of course, that's really what is the result of it all. But they're also trying to take on us at the same time. And that is a war on those two fronts they can never win. So the more they pursue it, the more they're going to lose. They're going to lose in Ukraine, and they're going to lose right here in Downing Street as well, eventually. So thank you very much for listening.